Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. On today's episode, I have two guests, and they happen to be two of the nicest people in Hollywood. First up is MJ Rodriguez. The Pose star is getting all sorts of Emmy buzz for her work as Blanca on the show's third and final season. Find out what she has to tell me about life after Pose. Plus, she weighs in on Caitlyn Jenner's controversial remarks about the trans community. Then later, Jonathan Majors, who is also an Emmy favorite for HBO's Lovecraft Country. Of course, we also talk about reports he's joining the Ant-Man film franchise as villain Kang the Conqueror, and those rumors he's been cast in the third Creed movie to be directed by Michael B. Jordan. But before we get to today's show, we're going to take a short break. I'll be right back.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Just for Variety. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. In the three seasons that Pose was on the air, MJ Rodriguez became a household name for her portrayal of house mother Blanca. Here, Rodriguez opens up about Blanca's legacy, life after Pose, she's going to be starring opposite Maya Rudolph in an upcoming sitcom, and how she feels about Caitlyn Jenner. I talked to Rodriguez from her home in New Jersey just days after the series finale aired on FX, and she debuted her new single, Something to Say, during her surprise performance at the Out Loud Music Fest in Los Angeles. How are you?
I'm good. I'm hanging in there. You know, just got my little glam done. I have to get done up for you.
You look gorgeous. You look gorgeous.
Thank you, my goodness.
How's life treating you? How's it like getting on stage and performing for how many people the other night?
I think it was 3,000, I think? Like 3,500. It felt good. It felt really good to get on stage again. I've been waiting to get on stage and perform my own music for a while now. And finally, you know, it literally is a great ode to the song, I Have Something to Say, because boy, is that a way to say something, just to go out mm-hmm. there and be on the stage. You know what I mean, Mark? So I was happy about it. And I'm happy people get to hear what I have to offer to the music industry. A lot of people haven't been hearing, you know, happy, driven, upbeat, love-infused music, you know, and right. funky, disco, R&B, pop music. And I feel like I have the space to do that. I hope, you know, the music industry accepts me in and you know, helps me be ushered in, because, you know, it's hard for girls like me, but I think it's happening. I think it's happening, you know?
How long were you working on the song? Was it a pandemic thing that you really got into it, or?
Yeah, it was both. It was, we had started the song in the middle of season two. So we've been working on it for about 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we've been working on it for about 2 years, the song itself, only because Corona had happened afterwards. We had planned on releasing it sooner, but Corona had happened and it kind of stunted everything. But 2 years.
Wow. So in the 2 years, did What You Have to Say change a lot?
Yes. I think it was an add-on to all the other things I wanted to say. I'm just like, oh, okay. So we got injustice happening already before with the trans community, but then when Rona came, we had that to talk about, and you know, the injustices, and obviously with Black Lives Matter and people, you know, people of color dying because of their skin complexion. I just was like, oh, this is definitely something to talk about. I definitely have something to say. I'm within every single last intersection of those communities. I'm Black, yeah. Latina, and I'm trans, and I'm a woman. Those are extreme intersectionalities. So why not say something about it? And your girl is here, and she wants to just spread the news. I feel like it's a message, and I gotta, you know, do my little my little mission is what they were saying.
So let's talk about Pose. Obviously, you know, yeah. And I've told this to you, and I've told this to a lot of people actually. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was at the premiere, I was emotional because one, for what the show is, mm-hmm. two, I started Variety right when Pose started. You were my first event I ever went to and talked to someone as Variety. What do you want the legacy of Blanca to be? What's her legacy?
I just want the legacy of Blanca to be strength, knowing that it's capable, knowing that she and any trans woman is capable of living a very fruitful life after the labor that she's put in. Also being a resilient woman and a woman who just so happens to be trans and got to actually have a happy ending. Like, it happens. It may not happen as often, but I feel like that's the legacy of the work of Pose with all of the trans women of the show, especially Blanca, because she's worked so hard. She worked with her kids. She fought for her kids, and now she's receiving all the gifts of what she put into her kids and then some because of the work she put into herself. And I want that legacy to be a lasting one for all trans individuals, people of color, and just people who are, you know, the underdogs. I want that to be the lasting legacy that they can come out of anything if they work hard and just live for them and do it the right way, do it through love and do it through family.
What was the most challenging part of playing Blanca?
I think the most challenging part of playing Blanca was the very hard, dramatic scenes that I had to really delve into. They were real. They weren't anything that was fantasized. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I had never lived that before. So me having to do the research and draw that up, it just created emotions within me that I had already known about, but also that I had never experienced. So it made it even more of an emotional trip for me. And, you know, I hope I did a good job in expressing that and doing that through Blanca, but I think those were very trying because there were times where I had to really work hard not to bring Blanca home. I had to make sure that she was separated from Michaela J. I couldn't just, you know, keep her bottled up in me while I went home because I had a family to go back to. Mm-hmm. And it's a totally different family from Blanca's family. Not only is it a different family, it's a different period. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to bring the pain of the period back to my house because there's so many people in my house that went through that. But that was the hardest part for me, really shaking the trauma and the pain that she went through as a Latina trans woman in the 80s and 90s. Also dealing with HIV and AIDS. It was a lot. It was really emotional.
How did you not bring it home? How did you sort of compartmentalize, I guess?
I just made sure when I woke up in the, it was definitely a morning thing. By the end of the night, I was able to really release her, but I had to set myself up. I had to like really tell myself, okay, the moment you walk in there, this is the work that you have to deliver and be the vessel for it as far as Blanca goes. But when you leave here, Michaela, you have got to leave her here because if you take her with you, it can affect, as I'm sure with many actors, it can affect your personal life and you just don't want that. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, she did come home with me sometimes, you know? Right. There were uplifting moments that Blanca gave that I was just like, I'm taking this piece of you know, the writing's on the page with Mr. Stephen Canals and Janet and Ryan and everyone who was a part of the team. What they created was beautiful, but the more in-depth scenes, the more in-depth work, I had to make sure I left that home. So I would just make sure I made a track mark down for myself. I'd write it down and say, MJ, you have to do this for you.
Now let's talk about Michaela J versus MJ.
Yes.
When do we use Michaela J? When do we use MJ? And are there differences?
There are extreme differences and there are a lot of similarities. I love Michaela J. MJ is my nickname. You know, I've been called MJ all of my life. A lot of people haven't really known my full name, which is Michaela Antonia J. Rodriguez. And I wanted to create a space where people can find and learn about the girl who's inside or outside of MJ. I've been saying outside before, but I guess I could say inside because
right,
on the inside, but people who can find out the girl inside of MJ and get to know her a little better, get to know her separated from Blanca and see what she's capable of, and also see her artistry, see the girl who's been pushing hard to really convey her dreams through her music and just mm-hmm. change hearts and minds through that. And MJ is the girl who's very, you know, pulled together, classy. She keeps it together for the acting realm. That's what I feel like, that's just what I have to give. That's in me. It's been in me for years. And but that's the other side of me. That's the more, I don't know the word to say, but I feel like she's the girl for acting, and Michaela J is the girl for every single day, you know, okay. Walks of life, especially music.
Okay, let's talk about the Pose FYC event.
Yes.
Elton John changes his vacation plans.
I know. I gagged, Mark. I gagged.
I hope you did.
I did. I was just like, oh my God, the king has come into the building. Like,
mm-hmm. and queen. The way. Or more the queen.
Period. Exactly. Exactly. No shade. But like, just royalty came pumping through.
Yeah.
And not only was I happy that someone of that stature coming through to support us, but the words that were conveyed from, you know, Elton John's mouth were the things that made me so safe and felt comfortable, and him vouching for us and, you know, fighting for us. It was a dream to have him there. And I mean, I can't believe it. I got kisses on my cheeks and on my lips, and I was like, yes, baby, like this is royalty. Like, I can't believe this is happening. But it was beautiful. And I remember Elton saying, you're going to keep in contact with me, right? And I was like, yes, I am.
You're like, I'm performing in a couple of nights. I could get you backstage passes.
You know what's so funny? I think my boyfriend or my mom, they were backstage and they mentioned it. He was like, I got something to do with Stevie Wonder tonight, and I got a couple of things I'm working on, but I'll try, or something like that. I was like, that's fine. You're royalty. Do what you gotta do.
What other celeb interactions have you had that sort of just have blown your mind?
Well, I will say Verdine White was another one of the royal kind of like experiences I had because he's been in the music industry for years, obviously, and Ryan Murphy when I saw him at the table, but we could talk about him right after this. But when I met Verdine, when he told me that he wanted to work with me, and I'm like, well, you want to work with me? I want to work with you. Right. You're an icon in the music industry. You've written, you do have a catalog, like a real catalog of music. People love what you, your brother, and the band have done. Like, and the fact that you say you want to work with me, that's crazy. That's insane. You know, so I kind of flipped. I had a very big fangirl moment. Mm. And it easily subsided after time went on. We became family, and I love him. Like him and the team that I'm with, they are great. They're really, right. really great. They're really good. And the same thing goes for Ryan Murphy. Like, I saw him in the room when I went into my first audition. I was like, oh my God, I was just on the phone with him. He just called me and asked me, what are you doing? And now I'm looking at him right in his face.
What do you think Pose has done for trans people behind and in front of the camera?
You know, I think what Pose has done for trans people behind the camera is give them more space and give them more opportunities in working behind the scenes and letting them understand, letting us understand the lay of the land and how we work in it. Or if we've already known about it, at least giving us space to work, you know, in that realm. And I would say in front of the cameras, it's exposure. It's an understanding of our lives. And it's getting our stories as true and as authentic as it can be for a long time, five years ago, our stories were not put in mainstream at all. We were just, you know, small little glitter that were speckled upon the screen. Now we're huge fireworks. You know, it's a beautiful showing of our lives in the best and most real way. And I think that's what's been happening as far as what Pose has done. And I'm so happy with it because now Pose has opened us up to even more opportunity.
Right. What does Hollywood have to do more of? Where do they need to improve?
I think Hollywood just has to constantly keep creating space for us. They have to make us feel comfortable as we will do the same. You know, this is a two-way street. It's not a one-way street, right? Like we're humans. We have things that we have to abide to and understand and respect, but I think Hollywood has to do the same for us in order for us to work together and for people to understand that awareness is key in making a message or broadening the scheme, making the scheme a bit broader for how our lives are and how we need to be represented on a television screen or anywhere. We have to be there to tell the story. And once there's a good percentage of us in those planes, then there probably won't be so much discord when someone else is coming in our position because there's enough of us there.
Dude, when you look at the anti-trans legislation that is just, you know, going on in state houses across the country, do you think that's part of a reaction? People are scared. Like, look, here's your visibility. Here we are. You're not making any apologies.
I do that think that is a reaction to what has been surging and what has been becoming a huge educational tutorial to our lives. I think with education on our lives, there's fight back for people not to know, or they don't want them to know. They don't want the younger generations to understand themselves. They want to put them back into this space of going to conversion therapy or second guessing who they are, when in reality, people are who they are from birth, you know, but I do see hope and I do see change. And I do see that a lot of those legislations are having a strong battle and getting it passed. And yeah, you damn right. Excuse my language. Yeah, it should happen that way. No discrimination should be put on any kind of human being. So how I feel about that, I'm disappointed, but I still see hope and I still see a beautiful group of individuals, trans, cis alike, LGBTQAI, POC, any person on this earth alike that are fighting for the rights of just the human existence. So, yeah, and I'm at the front lines of that too.
And what do you say to someone like Caitlyn Jenner, who people were surprised, but I don't know if they were really that surprised of her, you know, saying things that are considered anti-trans, and she's a trans woman.
You know, it's unfortunate that she's one of our sisters saying these things, but with that, I love her from a distance. I don't want to spew any hate on her because she is human, but I do think there needs to probably be a learning curve or somebody constantly may need to have the conversations with her. But I think that's something that she probably has to deal with. I think she'll figure it out on her own when there's a depletion of the community that probably just doesn't want to deal with her. And that's unfortunate because I would never want that, you know, but it happens when you have your opinions about things, you know, such as life. But yeah, I'm not as excited about what she said, but that doesn't take my love away from her as a human and what she could learn from. Because I do think that we're all capable of learning.
Now let's talk about learning from someone like Maya Rudolph.
Hey, I'm down for that.
You're starring in a show opposite Maya Rudolph.
Rudolph, I know. I'm kind of gagging at it. I'm so excited. I love Maya. She's hilarious as all hell. She's so witty and she's so intelligent and smart at the same time. And I'm just happy we get to play opposite of each other and play off of each other in total different characters, you know? And she's playing Molly, this you know, rich, wealthy woman, and I'm playing this girl who's worked her way up in the position that I'm in, and this beautiful, amazing, rich woman comes in who owns half of the business. Sophie is like, who is this? And I have to abide by her? Okay, great. All right. You know, like, but I think that's so awesome. I think it's amazing that they get to do that. I feel like the people need to see that. And also I feel like versatility needs to be seen from me. I haven't gotten a chance to do something different, and people see that I'm capable of that. So I'm going to show them.
So how did it happen? Like you said, listen, we really know you as a dramatic actress. Did they come to you, or do your people have to say to them, like, listen, we're telling you, she could do this.
Give her the chance. You know, Mark, I'm not going to lie. I haven't really had the inner workings of what goes on behind the scenes. You know, I have spoken to Maya. I've spoken to the writers and everything. And it was great rapport when we were speaking together. But I don't know the behind the scenes. I just knew that I knew that I was a great fit for it. And hopefully, you know, well, actually they did. And I'm very happy with that. But I was just hoping that I was a great fit for it. And I was great for the part, you know, and that they saw that I was capable of the part from the auditions that I've done. But yeah, I don't know about that. And I kind of live that I don't know about it. I like, you know, the no, because I feel like if I did, I probably would freak myself out.
So now a fun question for you. I usually phrase it as, tell me about your worst audition, but then I say your most memorable audition. Something that just didn't go the way you wanted it to go and you thought it was gonna go better.
Oh yeah, I thought that I had, okay, so Billy will probably crack up at this. I went in for Kinky Boots for one of the angels. And that was my space to really let people see who I was even more as the trans, strong, Latina, Afro-Latina woman I was.
Right.
But there were also notes that had to go along with this package that I wanted to do. And I went into that room. And there's a song called In This Corner. And I didn't sing it like that. It cracked horrendously. Uh-oh. And the guys behind the table were like, yeah. But I laughed too, because I was like, honey, that was tragic. You know, I couldn't even help but laugh, because it was a tragic crack, honey.
What happened that you cracked like that?
I don't know. The note must have been too high. I must have, you know, my voice must have been, I don't know what happened, Mark, but I flubbed that thing. And I remember walking out of that audition and going, well, I won't be getting that for a while. Let me do something.
Now, when something like that happens, do you say, can I do it again?
No, I don't. I mean, I always leave it up to them to see, you know, say, they usually tell me, all right, well, let's try something else, MJ. You know, let's see what else you're capable of. And I respect that, you know, just so that they can see the versatility. But honey, you know, they're looking at that. They're like, well, we wanted her to hit this note. So hopefully she can nail this next song that she has. So she got a little hope.
Now, did you ever tell Billy the story?
No, I never told Billy that. He would crack up, though. He would crack up if I told him.
And then another fun question for you, because we're at Variety, we're celebrating the reopening of New York and the reopening of Los Angeles. What's one of your favorite restaurants in New York to dine in at? Not get takeout, but you go to this restaurant, you love dining there.
Cafeteria, 100%.
Yeah. I can't believe that place is still around.
Yeah, child, listen, the cafeteria is the place to go. All of the children go there. Everyone goes there. And the food is immaculate. It's just so good. But it's just the community. You know, Mark. You know.
I went to the opening.
I went to the opening, MJ.
Okay,
I'm kind of jelly that you went to the opening. I wish I was at the opening. I was sitting there too.
That place is just like that. I mean, every time I'm in New York now, but every time I go past, I'm like, it's still there.
It's still going. Even through the mists of a pandemic, they're still pumping. Either that or Elmo. I don't know if you've heard of Elmo.
Elmo!
Girl,
I remember when Elmo was first just the restaurant of Barracuda.
Uh-huh.
Remember, we started by this. Oh, I know. I lived down the block from Barracuda when I lived in Chelsea.
Barracuda was a hot place to go.
Oh my God. And I mean, I literally lived down the block. So it's like, either I was
I'm sorry. I'm like, we have about to have a whole conversation right now.
I was back. I've been in LA now 17 years. So
two years ago.
Like when it first opened and Barracuda, either I'd go in to get drunk before I was sober or coming home and I was mm-hmm. really drunk. Barracuda was the last stop on the block if you were...
Yeah, you wanted to get like a little drink. Yeah, you wanted a little vodka tonic, honey, you know?
Yeah, all the Candace Kane shows and...
I think I watched Peppermint do a show at Barracuda. Barracuda's tight. It's small up in Barracuda.
Oh my God.
Peppermint did a show there and... Honey, Candace Kane was there. Mila Jam was there. I don't know if you've heard of Mila Jam's music artist. Mm-hmm. Those are all my sisters. And the times when everybody was able to go out, this was like 2 or 3 years ago. Those moments for me, because I was a little youngin', you know what I mean? Right. And my sisters brought me into my culture to, you know, seeing what the LGBTQAI+ culture looks like and how we love on each other and how we uplift each other through shows like drag performances and everything. And honey, Barracuda was the place for the drag queens and the girls, the show girls.
Yeah. Like
that was the place where the girls performed and just lived. Candace Kane was there. She started there, didn't she?
She started there. Oh, no. And then I remember going to see Candace at a place I think it was like 6th Avenue. Mm-hmm. It was like a restaurant. It wasn't a gay bar. It wasn't even, I don't even think it was like a gay restaurant. You know, it was just a regular restaurant. And she would do this thing. How she did it, she would time it where in the middle of her act, she would leave the restaurant and do like cartwheels on 6th Avenue, stop a cab, go around the block and come back right on cue for the song.
See, that's what you call a performer, honey.
Yeah.
That's what you call a performer. Goals. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Goals.
I know. Sometimes I miss those days. Now I'm just an old guy who's married and we don't go to bars. We stay home.
Oh, but there's nothing wrong with that too. Listen, I live my cute little life in my home. Mm-hmm. It's a nice little humbled. I'm a homebody. When I need to perform and I work, I love what I do. So I'm always
going to... Do you have especially when you went on stage the other night at Out Loud, do you have a ritual that gets you pumping, that gets you into that space?
I mean, I have to say, there is always an influx of anxiety. Most of it is positive anxiety, like positive mm-hmm. nerves, right. 3 days before. And then the day of, there's a calm that comes over me. I guess it's my body being like, it's about to happen, girl. So I'm just readying you. And I'm like, okay, I'm letting you do what you have to do. And then when I get out on that stage, it's just, I feel like I explode. I don't know how to explain it, Mark. I just love it. I love getting there and I love seeing people happy. I love seeing them move, and the plus to it all is that they're listening to my music. But if I was performing to another song, obviously I would love that. But like the fact that they're loving on me and what I'm invoking from them, I'm invoking, and what they're being, what's being invoked from them, and that it's a song about love and about standing out and about just being who you are and realizing that we are more in common than anyone can ever realize. The fact that all of that is resonating within me, it's just like a firecracker and a firework that just bursts on stage. And I just love it. And I love seeing people smile. I do. It makes me so happy.
Do you have, for me, obviously I'm not a performer like you, mm-hmm. but for me, you know, if I go on a big red carpet, let's say I go like award season, right? I'm totally on all the time, on the carpets. Right after award season, it's literally like, it's almost a depression.
Really?
Like I crash. Oh yeah.
No.
Oh my God. Because the endorphins are just not going as they've been going for, you know, whatever months. Do you have a crash after?
I would say when it's heavy work, like pose, if it's really, if it's on a set and there's emotions and character building, mm-hmm. like in that way, then yes, it's a complete crash because I've invested most of my body to just be the vessel for this character that I've created. But when it's right. music, when it's performing, I don't have a crash. I just don't. And it would, I guess it would have to be worked out of me for me to have a crash, but I'm still on a high after I get off the stage. I want to get back on and do more. I want to show people even more of me and give them, you know, mm-hmm. what they've been wanting. Cause honey, you know, they want a performance. They want a girl to give you what she needs and also do it while she's singing her song. I want to give them that. They deserve that, you know, and especially with COVID-19, when we haven't had any chance to go to
right.
a live performance or any of that. Now people are finally like, I can get out. Things are being lifted. And if I can be at the forefront of lifting them up even more, giving them the energy, mm-hmm. I have a lot of it. So
yeah, I went to, last night I went to the In the Heights premiere. They did it up in mm-hmm. Washington Heights. And the carpet was like alive. It
yes.
was outside, no mask. People were hugging and kissing and shaking hands. And there was definitely a moment, a couple of times where I was like, whoa.
I know.
A lot. Mm-hmm. But it just, because there's a part of, listen, I'm vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of me, I'm like, you just got to go on living now.
Yeah, we do. We do. And I think we're at that point now. I feel like everyone is finally stepping out of their shell again. You know, and they're not afraid anymore. We're just,
right.
we're being who we knew we always were. And we've gotten out of a quote unquote funk for a year, quote unquote lost year. We're out of that now. You know, we're in a good space where we have our minds together and we want to live again.
You do. And the next time I talk to you, I want to do it in person.
Yes, please. I'm down with it. I'm down with it. I'm here for it.
That was MJ Rodriguez. We'll be back after this short break.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. Jonathan Majors is hot right now. Like really hot. Not only is he getting Emmy chatter for his role as Atticus in HBO's Lovecraft Country, but Marvel recently announced he's joined the cast of the third Ant-Man movie. Rumor is he's playing villain Kang the Conqueror. And earlier this month, it was reported that Majors nabbed a top billing role in the third Creed movie to be directed by Michael B. Jordan. Majors and I caught up from New York City where he had just come from a boxing session. We talked fatherhood, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, seeing a Rocky movie for the first time, and his work as a cowboy in the upcoming Jay-Z-produced Western, The Harder They Fall. Hello!
Let's just pause for a second. Let me just say it right now before we go any further. I saw the nails. Wicked. I saw them.
What do you mean?
Oh, nothing. Yeah, beautiful, man.
What nails?
Bravo.
It's so fun. Everyone is obsessed with this color.
It's so vibrant.
Yeah.
So vibrant. Yeah.
You know what? You got to have some fun. And it keeps me, I'm a lifelong nail biter, and it keeps me from not biting my nails.
There you go.
You know, and they tell people that, they look at me like I'm crazy, but I'm like, you know what? I'll admit it.
Whatever works.
Exactly. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm so good. I just got back from, in a park boxing, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I got in the car, rushed out. I don't live in Los Angeles. I don't stay here much. So like, it still amazes me how you have to have like 15 minutes to 20 minutes on either side of you trying to go someplace.
Yeah. And I call it right. What's happening right now is I call it vaccination traffic.
Oh yeah.
Everyone's getting vaccinated. All of a sudden I'm in New York right now, but I'm usually in LA and all of a sudden there's traffic again.
Yeah. Where are you from, New York?
I'm originally from New York. I grew up in Queens.
I heard it. Yeah. Stucky, you just, the nail vibrato was gone. I heard all that. I heard all the news.
But I moved to LA like 17 years ago.
Yeah.
But New York right now, like yesterday, traffic was insane.
Which is great, though, right? Yeah, feels good a little
bit. It's, you know, as a native New Yorker, seeing New York in the state that it's in and seeing so many places boarded up, it makes me so sad. It makes me really, really sad.
Yeah.
But little by little, last night they had their first big major movie premiere in the Heights.
Yeah. Did you see it?
Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's a perfect summer movie. Like you walk out of it, you can't not be happy.
Yeah. I watched it maybe 2 weeks ago on one of those, you know, blueprint, like please watch it. Yeah, it was dope.
Yeah, I say to everyone, I'm like, if you walk away from that movie not smiling, then you need some.
If you go to the doctor, you should leave the movies and go right to a therapist.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about therapy. Did you need therapy after doing Lovecraft? That's intense.
Man, Atticus and the whole family and Lovecraft, it was therapy in a way. Yeah. It's very therapeutic, very cathartic. So many moments in it that mirror my real life, chiefly, wow. I think right now I'm thinking when Atticus, I find that I'm to have a son, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm to name him George after coming back from the portal. And I say that to my father, Montrose, played by the wonderful Michael K. Williams. Peace be upon him. And that for me was, you know, talk about therapy, it was quite therapeutic because that was a conversation I had to have with my, that was a conversation I couldn't actually have with my biological father, just because of the nature of our relationship. And I failed at having that conversation with my father in real life. It's okay to fail. I didn't do it. I didn't get it all the way out. And there was a moment, I'm sitting on the couch and I remember looking over at Mike. And he actually sent me Father's Song, I believe that's the name of it. It's Prince. Mm. He was listening to that and he sent it to me between setups. And there's a line where Atticus goes, what do I do? You know, this is Atticus. It's the back four for sure. Right. So we've got Atticus, like he knows what he's doing. He's strong, he's smart, he's gonna figure it out. But he turns to his father and he goes, you know, what do I do? You know, and that's something I couldn't do. I wasn't brave enough to do in my real life, but then got to experience, you know, with Atticus, multiple things, but chiefly that moment I remember.
That's therapy, man. If something's making you think about your real life parental relationships.
Yeah.
That's the real thing.
It was beautiful, you know, and his engine, pushing his family forward, having to listen, having to cooperate, partner, all the things that are, you know, I think I started the pilot when I was 28 or 29 years old, shit, maybe 27. Mm. I'm only 31 now. You know how it goes. So, yeah, I say my late 20s, definitely, you know, cooperation, listening. I mean, I'd gotten to where I'd gotten to and survived the places I survived from by literally listening to myself, you know, and doing what I needed to do, you know,
right,
and stepping off the path, you know, to become, you know, what I wanted to be for myself. But I find out very quickly, you know, with my child, with my friends, proper friends and proper family, that cooperation muscle is a big thing, you know, and I also found that there's different cooperation and compromise, you know? I want to cooperate. Cooperate. I mean, we're both getting busy, you know.
How do you make sure that the relationship you have with your daughter, that yeah. she won't have this conversation if you're saying, I was too scared to go to my dad about something.
Oh man, I stick with her. I stick with it. You know, I was to do a slice of life. I was to do a film. film here in Los Angeles. That is my delivery, the food, but hopefully they only ring once. If they only ring once, that is a beautiful omen, right? but if they keep banging the house down, I can finish. I was to do a film here, and I, my daughter was involved in some capacity, and but ultimately I left the project, right? Or the project left me. Like the project just kind of dissolved, and my kid, she was so excited to do it, and she had earned the role, and mind you, she was going to be in the film, and I kind of was nudged into letting her do the film by my mentor and friend Spike Lee, and he was like, "Yo, she's got to do it. She's got to do it." Like, okay, cool. So we were all excited to do it, but it dissolved. And I had to talk to her, you know, via FaceTime and say, hey, you know, baby, this is what happened and this, that, and the other. And she's like, oh, okay, daddy, you know, as she does, my little lioness. And, but she's mine, you know, and I can look at her and I can tell, you know, what's right. what. And I said to her, you know, well, how you feel about it? I'm fine. I said, okay. With her father being her father, me being who I am, you know, I was looking at it and my heart was breaking. And I began to say, you know, well, daddy's really upset about this. You know, and I'm really angry about this. And I'm sad, you know, that we won't be able to do it. And I'm disappointed. And I feel some shame for, you know, wrangling you into this. And I began to weep. And she said, oh, it's okay, daddy. I love you. I said, okay. You just, you always tell your daddy how you feel. And I hung up. And her mother calls me back and says, Ella wants to talk to you. And I get on the phone with Lala, and she's got these red eyes, and she's like, "Daddy, I'm angry. I'm so sad." And I go, "Okay, yeah. Well, what else?" You know. And she begins to unload and tell me. And if she can do that, you know, if we just keep that practice going, that, you know, you always tell your dad how you feel. You know, you can always ask me. You know, if I don't have the answer, I'll figure it out. And it's just little moments like that. You know,
so important.
You know, starts a muscle memory, it's a different bond, you know, as your child grows, as anything grows, they're organic, you know. And
how old is she?
She's 8 years old.
Wow.
That's how, hopefully, you know.
That's the way you do it.
Yeah, that's the sense of the father, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
If I weren't to do it, that would be the sense of the father repeating themselves, which is everybody's biggest fear, you know, to repeat something that has happened to you or has happened to your people or your tribe.
Right.
You know, if you come from alcoholism, if you come from liars, if you come from broken homes, you don't want to repeat that.
No.
Yeah.
That's great. So tell me about, and I'm always fascinated by these stories, how is Lovecraft pitched to you? What was that pitch? Because this is obviously something that hasn't been done. It's something different. How did they say, okay, this is what's going to happen, and there's another world, and there's CGI, and...
Holy smokes, how was that pitched to me? truth be told, I mean, I wonder if I still have the email. I'm sure I do. Unfortunately, nothing goes away. you know what I mean? But... No, I mean, it's funny because I was told about this project by two separate people. One was my representative, and he told me. And then another was actually Yann Dimanche, the guy who did White Boy Rick. I got to be in that picture with him.
Yep.
And it was actually my workout buddy for a while. and he mentioned it to me, and he told me there's no way I was going to get it because there's a couple of guys involved. And I was like, cool. And I was like, I was literally right out of drama school, kind of, sort of, you know. But I think the way it was presented was very cool family drama. Follows this man, Alex Freeman, and he moves to supernatural world, something like that. And don't get me the line, man, that may not be it. It may have been like audition, boy. You know what I mean? It may have been like that, you know? Because I was getting it from so many different avenues. I was getting it, you right. know, from the street, from Palomar. And I was also getting it from like my rep. And it kind of sneaks up on you, you know? Like if you just read the pilot itself, like if you take out what I call the overture, right? The beginning. Mm-hmm. It's really just a family drama until about, yeah. I mean, it kind of all goes down in the third act. It goes, mm-hmm. you know, in the third act. Oh, no, one of the big components of the quote unquote pitch was Jim Crow America. That was really the thing that this man and his family are moving through Jim Crow America, dealing with ghosts and gals and monsters, etc. Right. That does sound like the one line. That does sound like, but that did not prepare me for, you know, what it was to be, you know. I remember I was reading episodes, and I was in Thailand at the time, and I was getting on these episodes, and my mind was blown. It was blown. I was like, "You're kidding me! You're kidding me!" I'm texting Misha Green. I mean, the time zone is completely fucked. But I'm hitting her and she's hitting me back. You know, she's a writer. She's writing out, right? You know, I'm like, this is incredible. This is incredible. This is incredible. Oh my goodness. You know, the amount of gratitude that I felt just reading those scripts and seeing those stories and watching Atticus change on the page and then being blessed enough to you know, embody that. Yeah, wicked, man. Wicked.
You said that, you know, in many ways, you are very similar to Atticus. Mm. Was there anything challenging about him that sort of got you stuck? That, you know, this is hard to walk through or work through?
Well, here's the thing. Here's a thing. In life, you kind of get to, in some ways, turn it off. Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways, watercolor, right? As the samurai would after battle. Mm-hmm. That's what we could do in life, in our day to day. You know, but Atticus, he was a soldier archetype. He had that archetype. So all he knew was the war, right? Right. There are similarities between us, but my internal conflict is not one of knowing my end, you know, mm-hmm. or fighting against my own morality and mortality, you know. Yes, I live in a very, 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 we all do, you know, we have different perspectives on it, but we live in a very racially charged climate, you know, mm-hmm. here in America. But it is in some ways veiled in Jim Crow America. It was not
right,
and he had to exist in that at all times, 24 hours a day. You know, he falls in love. And, I mean, I'm a gypsy. Like, I'm literally me, Jonathan. I'm around. I'm by myself most of the time. I'm moving in and out. Right. I get to play these cool guys. I'll run down home every now and then to see my mom. You know. But that isolation that I have kind of keeps me whole and allows me to keep my mind straight, you know. That's very difficult to do when, for Atticus, where he is always, always, always being done to, right? Mm-hmm. Always being mm-hmm. done to, and then having to react and then love and then react and then fight and then react and then save. And then the thing about Atticus, here it was. This is where we're different, right? We have You're Atticus, right? Like we all have these similarities, but the spine of Atticus in the film, right, in the story, in the series, is as follow. And this is where the conflict comes in. Here is a man that wants to be safe, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here is also a man who wants others to be safe. Mm-hmm. Well, that's impossible. It's impossible, right? He is always in conflict. right? He's mm-hmm. always in conflict. I want to keep myself safe, but at the same time, I want to keep those I love safe. And everybody's under attack. It's impossible to stay in one place. That's not an experience I have in my day to day, you know, just the climate that I live in and, you know, the man that I am. So I wouldn't say it got me stuck, but I had to get busy mm-hmm. on that big time, you know, and always kind of keep that activated.
Right.
You know, Atticus is a man that doesn't sleep. You know, he doesn't sleep. He's afraid of sleeping. You know, mm-hmm. what is it to be haunted? I got beefs. I got people I don't fuck with anymore. I got all types of stuff in my quote unquote past 31 years right. of living, but I have not been to war. You know, right. not properly. Right. You know, but in some cases, I guess you don't really have to visit. You know, a foreign country. To understand that, but
right.
there is a certain amount of currency that does come from actually, you know, the physical experience of it. So
mm-hmm.
I'll conclude, but you feel me?
So you just said you're a gypsy. You said you were boxing.
Yeah, yeah.
You said, as Atticus, you're fighting all the time. You're doing this action stuff. So are you boxing for Ant-Man or are you boxing for Creed?
So deep. I'm boxing. Well, here's the thing. Acting, being an actor, right? Being an artist is a lifestyle. So you always mm-hmm. want to be ready for everything. So none of the above and all of the above. Yeah.
What
and for physical and for physical health.
Right. No, believe me, I know. I've been trying to lose the COVID weight.
You look fine.
Straight. Thank you. So tell me, what could you tell me about Ant-Man? You're just going to say nothing, aren't you?
I don't know if you know this, but Paul Rudd will be reprising his role of Ant-Man. And I believe Marvel will be, I think they're going to take a shot on this one and produce this one. So that's as much as I can, as much as I know.
Okay, let me ask you, have you always been an Ant-Man fan? You know, he's not the biggest superhero of the bunch.
Pun intended.
Right.
No, it's funny, man. I have not. No, I wasn't. I was not. The wonderful thing about just kind of like my timeline for my education is mm-hmm. that I watched the Marvel films. And to that end, the DC films kind of blow up. I watched mm-hmm. that. I watched that. My aforementioned father, right? I remember the last time we had like a real daddy Sunday. We went to go see, I think it might have been Infinity War, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I was in college. I was in college. It came up and we went to see it. But no, I got to watch those movies in context. You know, I got mm-hmm. to, the funny thing is, I actually never missed one either. It's just so culturally, our culture is so steeped in it, you know, mm-hmm. in a way, mm-hmm. and vice versa. Like, if someone made a time capsule, they would go, yeah, the superhero movies. Right. But because I was watching these movies at a certain time in my training, I did watch and go, oh, I see what they're doing there. I see what it is. To the best of my knowledge. Oh, they're Greek plays.
Mm.
The Marvel, the superhero genre, but particularly Marvel, in my opinion, you know, I'm not a writer or anything. They're Greek. You know, the size of them, the things they're dealing with, the idea of fate and fantasy and future and legacy and all these things, etc. You know, so I am a fan of, you know, the Sophocles, yeah, the Oresteia is one of my favorite pieces of writing. You know, and I see rhythms and rhymes correlating in the quote unquote Marvel universe. So Ant-Man included, I see that.
How much do you have to get in shape, though? Listen, in Lovecraft.
Yeah.
I mean, your arms are like this.
Mm.
Those biceps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thanks.
But like, this is whole other level crazy working out. I mean, you see the shots of Chris Hemsworth and you're like, what is that guy doing?
I got Chris Hemsworth. I never met the brother, but he's Thor. I mean, that's a part of it. I think he's got that. I think he's got that locked down. But no, just for me, it's just the given circumstances. Alec was built that way because he did the thing he did. One of the things people might miss in Lovecraft, in regards to Atticus, and I mean, there's a million things going on, is that Atticus was a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
In Florida. Now, you have to understand, we don't really have hydraulic lifts at this point. And right. If you do, you don't have them, you know, at the type of mechanic shop I'm working at. Right. So Atticus was built that way, one, because he was a fighter and a warrior, but also because he was a fucking mechanic. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
At any moment, like, you and I can step out of our door and wait for the UPS guy to walk up. We go, yep, there he is. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's the given circumstances. So, circumstances being what they are, we'll see how, you know, what the physicality is for this. And then, you know, we'll do our best, as I always try to do.
So, Twitterverse and the internet has been going crazy asking, is Kang the Conqueror going to be in Loki? Is Kang the Conqueror going to be in Loki? I know you want to tell me, right?
I have no idea what you're talking about. No idea.
And then Creed? Is Creed happening, or you're not allowed to talk about that either? Or you're not sure?
No. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Fingers crossed. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Do you remember the first time you saw a Rocky movie?
Yeah, so my it was a VHS at our farm in Waco, Texas, with my grandpa.
Wow.
I also remember taking my my mentor group my first year or second year at Yale, mm-hmm. taking them to see either Creed. I think it was Creed. Well, no, it was North Carolina. For North Carolina School of the Arts, and I was a four, and I took the 1, 2s, and 3s to go see it. Yeah, no, they blend together, but yeah, I remember seeing that film, and being very very happy to see that we had very much like Atticus, this version, you know, mm-hmm. this addition to the pantheon of boxing films, the pantheon of heroes, etc. You know,
And then you have another film. This one you can't talk about because you have shot it, so you can't tell me you can't. Jay-Z as a producer.
Yeah.
How wild. Yeah. So one.
The harder they fall.
One, did Jay-Z come to set?
Mm-hmm. Two,
Jay-Z. I mean, everything that guy touches turns to gold. No.
Hear him say it, you know, or not even hear him say it, I would say platinum.
Right.
Did Mr. Jay-Z come to set? Not to my knowledge. I wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. Straight up, not to my knowledge. You know, we were shooting that in the middle of the shit, man. Like, it was on. I mean, I had buckled down and stayed in New Mexico all through the lockdown. Took my lockdown there and continued to prep the film alongside my director, James Salmon. He was there for a long while with me too before returned to London. The movie, that film, you know, sight unseen. It's kind of like this. Like if I've made it, you know, if I made it, I kind of have a feeling, you know, how mm-hmm. it's gonna go. You know, mm-hmm. But this, my feeling is overwritten in many ways by the people who are involved. As you were saying, mm-hmm. you know, Jay-Z, James Lasseter, Lawrence Bender, mm-hmm. Brother Tendo up at Netflix, James Samuel as our director of The Bullets. And that's the other guys, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's not even including like the people on the field with me,
right.
You know what I mean? Idris Elba, Regina King, Zazie Beetz and Keith Stanfield.
That's a really bad cast.
I mean, I don't know. You're saying bad isn't like bad or bad. Pulling my leg.
Incredible.
Yo, it's the Avengers. You know what I mean? Like, we're like, whoo, it's like, let's go, you know? And that was the thrust of the film. I mean, James Samuel.
Where'd you go?
I'm right here. James Samuel is a, did the recording stop? Are we good?
No, you're good.
James Samuel is a visionary. And right. Listen, I have no idea what the film's gonna do, but mm-hmm. I know that the acting department did their damnedest. I know that the costume department did their damnedest. I know that the directing department did their damnedest. I know that the Wranglers, I love them more than oranges. They did their damnedest, you know. And then we have all these guys who help us, you know, make and craft the piece when it's all said and done, you know,
right.
The producers and all those guys. And then you've got, you know, actually James Samuels is, we have a Hulk. You've got Hulk, you know, who, I mean, just his legacy, that this piece is a part of his legacy. And conversely, it's a part of my legacy and part of James's legacy and part of everybody's existence. It's event filmmaking, you know? And that's just on the surface. We haven't gotten into like the heart and soul and tears and blood of it, you know? Mm. I mean, I broke my, I shattered my heel. In How the film, you'll see. And the cool part about it is, mind you,
did you just say the cool part of it? A cool part of a heel fracture?
Well, the cool part of a heel fracture is that like you can't really do anything about it. It's just kind of like, this is what it is. You know, it's funny. I actually limped on to Savannah to start this other film, Devotion, and my buddy and director J.D. Dillard. You know, I said to him, hey, you know, I was limping when I first, he's like, yeah, I thought that was a part of the character. I thought you just made a choice. And I was like, you know what? I love you for that. I love you for that. But Devotion, another fabulous divine piece, I think. But The Harder They Fall is, I mean, it's coming. I mean, I usually don't watch, you know, but I can't wait to feel it, if you know what I mean. I can't wait to feel what it does for the people. You know, I always say it's for the homies, and like The Harder They Fall is for all the homies, you know, all the homies. I mean, you, me, your people, our people, the industry, overseas, it's for everybody. It's a Western, you know, it's a fucking Western, you know. And you get to meet Nat Love, and you get to meet Rufus Buck, and you get to meet Stagecoach Mary and Cherokee Bill. You know, these are all the characters we play. You know, there where Lindo and I are together again on it.
Again, yeah, that's and, awesome. So you put on a cowboy hat. You have chaps. How cowboy are you?
But it's pretty cowboy. No chaps, right? Because that's new. No chaps, because I got to, you know, there's no chaps. No chaps. My fella didn't wear chaps. But all the way in. I love horses. I'm a horseman. My horse's name was Cinco.
Cinco?
Cinco, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because we're just rambling here, but my buddy Jesse Clemens on Hostiles, another Texan, and Hostiles was just my first feature ever. He rode Cinco in that film, and then I got the ride Cinco in this one, but I got the ride Cinco in this one, so. You know, stay tuned, man. I'm just excited as you are about it. I could talk about it. I mean, if you are excited, I'm just excited.
No, I am. I mean, everything from the fractured heel to the full-on cowboy, the Cinco. I mean, it sounds like my kind of movie.
It's beautiful. And the music. We haven't gotten to the music, but yeah.
It's awesome. Well, Jonathan, this was great. I'm so glad we got to catch up.
Oh, my friend. This was wonderful.
Yeah, this was great. And I hope the next time we do, we get to do it in person.
I'd love that.
We're getting there. Slowly but
slow and steady.
Yeah, that's what it is. Awesome, sir. Have a good one.
Yes, sir. Talk to you very soon.
Take care. Stay safe.
Thanks for your time.
You got it.
That was Jonathan Majors. Thanks for listening to this week's Just for Variety. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. And of course, check out my weekly column, Just for Variety, in the magazine and online at variety.com. See you soon.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.